Very nice newscast.
He said as he was eating breakfast.
Mm-mm. Not breakfast.
Well, then what is it? Didn't anybody ever tell you not to talk with your mouth full?
I've only been told don't talk.
Oh, yes. Yeah. All your life.
So you know when you come in into the palatial WGN studio complex, there's always a nice display. Marlene Wells of our staff.
Seasonal and timely. Seasonal. It's very pretty.
She's got a nice Easter display out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that
is edible.
Is a nice bowl of hard candies.
Oh, okay.
I'm enjoying a lovely butterscotch hard candy right now.
Okay, I'm headed down the hall here in a little while.
I have not had a butterscotch candy in decades.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I had one either.
Quite delicious.
My grandma had a bowl of those in her kitchen.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. And my grandmother would never go anywhere without having a few in her purse.
Right. Yeah, they always carried them in their purse.
Hopefully wrapped in cellophane, not always. Sometimes covered in lint.
Which made it taste extra special.
Extra delicious. Yeah. So I'm enjoying not only the delicious butterscotchiness of it all, but it's like a very nostalgic thing right now.
Are you about done?
Mm-mm.
No.
I don't expect to be done with this thing.
Andy, I would expect that there will be others during the course of the next 3 hours and 52 minutes.
It's a good bet. So I'll take that bet.
I'm not going to be done with this at least until far-flung forecast. I don't think. Happy Sunday morning, everyone, and happy Passover. Passover began last night. And we'll go through next Sunday, the 20th. Andy, happy Passover.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
This is the group called the Maccabees. Maccabeats.
Not bad. Sorry,
Maccabeats. And they do this traditional song, Dayenu, in lots of different styles of music. Very hip and happening. Shwani hopping and a bopping, doing the head bop.
This is fun. Good harmony.
Easy to dance to.
Yeah.
Very nice. So what was there a celebration typically in homes last night?
Seder. The Seder.
The Passover,
which means
Seder.
Order.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a service that goes along with it. Four cups of wine. You've got the apples and honey, and you've got the
other herbs, like bitter.
Yeah, bitter herbs.
Like different things.
There's a lamb shank bone. There's egg. Ooh. Yeah. It's quite a production.
Quite a feast.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So, yeah, traditional, you can have it the first night or the second night. Okay. Actually, some people have them both.
But Passover continues until the 20th. Do you do something each night?
No. It's just avoiding certain foods for the week.
Got to stay kosher for the week.
Yeah, you can't have anything basically that's has yeast or flour. So it's a matzah week.
I like shopping the Passover aisle this time of year at the grocery store.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, they've actually come a long way. I mean, there's a lot of because you get a little tired of matzah. I mean, it's not the most tasty thing in the world.
Have you had matzah? I think it's called
crack.
Crack matzah.
Yeah, Melina made that a couple of years ago.
Shwani, have you ever had the crack matzah?
I have not. No,
so good.
No,
you know matzah, like a sheet of matzah. This is dipped in chocolate.
Yeah,
sometimes has nuts on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean there's more creative ways of being able to enjoy the foods that you're eating a little bit more.
Macaroons? You like the macaroons?
I'm not a big macaroon guy. No.
You're not.
Not a big macaroon guy. I like to find the little jelly fruit slices that they have.
Mm.
We have a box of those waiting for me at home. And yeah, there's they've made some big strides in like chocolate bars that taste really good.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's not the the ideal situation if you're a foodie. And luckily, I'm not, so it's all good.
And he has just listed all the foods that he likes.
Exactly, in one segment.
One sentence. Yep. Yeah. Boy, I love a coconut macaroon. You like a coconut macaroon, Sean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
I made some on TV a couple of weeks ago, my TV cooking segment. Mm-hmm. Oh, baby, those were good.
How did everything turn out this past week with
the deviled egg?
Yeah.
I was watching, by the way. The reaction was hilarious.
I have never cooked such a polarizing recipe in my life.
It was unbelievable.
Because, you know, most people love deviled eggs. Some people, Larry Potash and Pat Tomasulo, can't stand them.
And they don't like them?
They don't like the idea of anybody else liking them.
Oh, wow.
They were quite vocal.
They were booing me. they were booing me during the segment. Who boos somebody during a cooking segment?
They were booing you.
If you don't like it, shut up. Oh, sit back and shut up.
I'm going to remember that now.
Yeah, they were booing me. That said, Paul Conrad had about 10 of them.
Okay. That tells you he liked them.
I made two big platters. I made two dozen, deviled eggs. So that's 24 halves, two huge platters, gone in 7 minutes.
And I'm assuming that they turned out along the lines of the delicious ones that your mother made. Then.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to say, they were pretty great. But, Pat Tomasulo and Larry Potash had their way with me.
They were relentless.
They were brutal.
Yep.
They were brutal on my deviled eggs, which, you know, as we know from, you know, like stuff that we talk about on this show, if somebody attacks something, 50 times more people will come out of the woodwork to defend you. I've never had so much email people supporting my deviled eggs.
That's awesome.
After Pat and Larry trashed them without even trying them. I said, try one. Maybe you'll like it. No. It's torture. It's torture to eat. I wouldn't give my worst enemy a deviled egg because you've never had a good one.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, you said Paul Conrad went for them, and I imagine others did,
Robin,
too.
Robin did.
Robin, yeah.
Robin Baumgarten had several.
But you didn't save any for us.
The crew, people were lined up. Even before the segment was over, people were
lined up
to make sure that they got some. So it was a big hit.
But in the back of your mind,
except for the little 8-year-olds at the anchor desk. You don't like deviled eggs. I'm going to boo you.
I'm going to boo you.
He's eating deviled eggs. Let's say boo.
I can hear this. You're trying to talk about the recipe.
They were booing
me. And they're in the off mic, you're hearing boo.
Oh, yeah. It was.
Boo.
And sometimes on mic.
And sometimes on mic.
No, it was on mic. Yeah. It was on mic. And just the week before with my coconut macaroons, Larry Potash, these are the best macaroons I've ever had. That was his exact quote. So look how the tides can turn on you.
Yep.
Anyway, the deviled eggs were fantastic, unbelievable, ridiculously positive reaction to it all. just on a side note, what started all of this, it's my mom's recipe. We played the recording that I found of her giving us the recipe. Such a beautiful and lovely response to me playing the recording of my mom's recipe last week.
It was really nice to hear.
Yeah, it was good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. It was nice. So we'll see what people boo about today. See if we can get the boo-o-meter going.
I was just going to comment, though, that while you were making the deviled eggs and the fact that we talked about them last week and really talked at length about them last week.
Right, you would think a nicer person would have brought some in.
Well, I was thinking that perhaps in the back of your mind you thought, man, maybe
Shawnee
would like a couple. Yeah, maybe Andy would like them. Maybe Jack would like some.
I'm guessing Andy's not a deviled egg.
I would donate mine to you happily, Shawnee.
Yeah, I'm guessing Andy's not a deviled
egg. I will accept.
Yeah. But you,
Jack, Engineer Bob,
Yeah.
Just you didn't didn't cross your mind, I take it.
It did, but then
You thought, nah.
It's like, oh, that's a lot of work to make another batch.
Okay.
And you didn't want to risk us booing him either.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't boo that.
I wouldn't boo either. Even if I didn't like him, I wouldn't boo.
I've been through a lot of emotional trauma this week.
Being booed for your deviled eggs.
My culinary sensitivity is quite high this week.
Goodness gracious.
Let's see. You know what I did last night? Talk about Easter and Easter traditions. I watched the Ten Commandments last night.
I saw that was on. Did you stay up for the whole thing?
I watched every second of it.
Wow.
I love that movie.
I saw it in the theater.
Did you really?
In the early 1970s, they re-released it.
Right, the movie came out in 1956.
You did, but they re-released it.
They re-released it on the big screen?
On the big screen in the early 70s, and I remember seeing Charlton Heston on Dick Cavett or something talking about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we went to see the Ten Commandments around, I'd say, 1970, 71. Yeah.
I love the tradition of it, that it's on every year. But, I mean, it's a little corny.
There are some dated sections in it.
The special effects are super corny.
That was a big deal back then.
But it was a big deal.
Yeah.
The fact that they did this in 1956 and did these special effects, which, you know, parting of the Red Sea, and it looks like Bugs Bunny's going to walk out because it's animated.
Yeah, what's up, Doc? You're part in the Red Sea.
That's characters.
After this day, you shall see his chariots no more.
No! You'll be dead under them! No,
no, no. Yeah, Edward G. Robinson,
the
see?
The Lord of Hosts will do battle for us. Behold his mighty hand.
Oh, boy, here comes the animation. Comes the special effects parting of the sea. Imagine if they remade that today with today's special effects.
Mm.
And then suddenly there's a big path for people to walk down the middle of the Red Sea. Yet the fire burning for Ramses, Yul Brynner. And that Edward G. Robinson, see? You can't believe what's going on. Hey, you dames. Come on. Yeah, see?
All right, this is Biggie talking, see?
Yeah, see, I need a few pieces of gold, see? Let's make
That's right. Edward G. Robinson was in that movie, wasn't he?
Oh, baby, was he ever.
Yul Brynner, Charlton Heston, Edward G. Robinson.
Vincent Price? Vincent Price was in it. He was the brick master.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he was the brick master killed by Ramses, by Moses.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Spoiler alert. Movie's like 70 years old. Spoiler alert. You know who else is in it? Lily Munster.
Really?
Lily Munster is in it?
Yvonne
DiCarlo.
Oh, yeah. Played Moses' wife.
She played the wife?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I need to check out the cast again.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie.
Yeah. Like I said, we saw it I saw it in the theater before, you know, previous years and seeing it on TV, but
it's probably restored by then. If you saw it in the 70s, they probably did some sort of
restoration, I guess. Yeah. Wouldn't have been the 20th anniversary yet.
Imagine,
it would have been.
With all the special effects that they have now and what they can do with movies now.
Oh, boy.
Who would play Moses now? Who would be a good Moses now? Who would be a good Moses and who would be a good Ramses?
Open up the phone lines. Let's find out.
I'm going to say John Malkovich for Ramses.
Ooh, good call.
Okay, yeah.
Who would be a good... trying to think. Can't think of who would be a good Moses right now. But it'd have to be somebody who wears a good, you know, wig and fake beard.
or has a good beard, period.
Because toward the end of the movie, it looks like they just pasted it on.
Glued it on.
Cotton balls on his face.
And if I remember, it's salt and pepper hair at the end there.
Well,
too.
He's completely white at the end.
It becomes, that's right, yeah.
Because he brings the tablets down
mm-hmm.
from the mountain. Which all, you know, this is me. This is weird me. I'm watching this profound movie about, you know, God creating the Ten Commandments and Moses brings them down. And
I know what you're going to say.
What can I?
I know what you're going to say.
What am I thinking of?
Go ahead.
Oh, pay heed. The Lord Jehovah has given unto you these 15. Ten commandments for all to obey.
Melbourne.
I knew it.
Melbourne.
I knew it.
So good.
These 15.
Oi. Ten.
Oh, that's funny. I need a butterscotch candy.
You know what? I have a taste for a deviled egg right now. It would have been nice if someone who made them brought them in.
Yeah, you need better friends, really, because somebody should have done this. We present to you the saga of the far-flung forecasts.
Don't you love those names for films back then? Cinescope, VistaVision, Panavision.
The greatest.
Yeah, and the colors were so vivid.
Yeah, the colors.
Technicolor.
Amazing.
Technicolor, yeah.
And now today's far-flung forecast. So it is written, so it shall be done.
Coming to you in Super Vista sound.
Whatever that means. Take it away.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I didn't know if you were.
Here's Dave Schwann.
Oh, okay. All right. That'll work.
He wants me to say his name.
That'll work. Well, thank you.
Big dramatic intro.
Thank you very much.
Now here's Dave Schwann.
And friends, Romans, countrymen,
there you go.
Lend me your
Stay
ears.
Stay in the spirit. Exactly.
And get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We're headed south today to Huntsville, Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama actually is the largest city. It is not the capital of Alabama, but it is the largest city at over 215,000 people. And was kind of instrumental in the Confederacy in the Civil War. But we bring up Huntsville, Alabama today because in the 1960s and 1970s, it was headquarters for the Marshall Space Flight Center, where the Saturn V rockets were designed under the direction of Wernher von Braun and his crew there to put man in space.
What year would this have been?
This had been 1966 through the early 1970s.
This was after the Kennedy years, the Gemini
stuff and all that. Yeah. But they were probably a part of it. But the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville was the headquarters for the design of the Apollo spacecrafts. And, of course, one of them was Apollo 13. And you're not going to believe this, but 55 years ago today,
unbelievable,
when everything was going well, all of a sudden, we heard this.
Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Houston, we've had a problem. We've had a main B bus undervolt.
Roger, main B undervolt. Okay, stand by, 13. We're looking at it.
Essentially, what happened was an oxygen tank on the command module exploded and took power out and, you know, took power away very, very rapidly from the spacecraft. They couldn't land on the moon as a result, and they just barely brought the three astronauts back. Captain Jim Lovell, also Fred Hayes, and the command module pilot was Jack Swigert. Of course, Captain Lovell is still with us. He just had a birthday. He's 97.
Lake Forest's very own.
Yeah, he's 97.
That's amazing.
Fred Hayes is something like 91 or 92. Jack Swigert passed away in the early to mid-1970s. He ran for Congress and died before he took office. Also, the flight director of Apollo 13, Gene Kranz, still alive as well in his 90s. But Huntsville,
amazing how calm they sounded in that.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah, especially when they discovered they only had 15 minutes of life support left.
Houston, we have a problem. we're looking
into it. We have a main B bus undervolt.
Yeah, we're looking into it. I would have been screaming my head.
I can see.
Get me out of here.
No, seriously, I saw an interview with Captain Lovell a long time ago, and he said people asked him, the instinct would be to panic, right? And he
said, be with me.
And he said, we knew that we had something critical to solve, and we just put our minds to it there.
That's why those guys were extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the dopes among us would panic.
Now,
I think panic would be the second thing that I would do.
What would the first thing be? You don't want to say that on the radio. Okay.
No.
And this will come as no surprise to you, for Dean and Andy, both of you, but when I started looking up things for this, of course, I have to look at all of the coverage of TV, you know, from this, and coming across video of Walter Cronkite.
Oh, that's the best.
It's incomparable. Just incomparable, but it was 55 years ago today.
They all stayed so calm, even Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, oh yeah. In fact, some of the video I saw, the actual explosion happened late at night, around 10:30 at night. And so, you know, he was most likely at home, and I'm sure they, you know, got him up and said, we need you to come in.
Get your horn rimmed glasses and get down here.
And that's exactly what he was wearing at 1-2 o'clock in the morning for the special reports. You may also remember this, Dean, that primetime TV.
Excited, how excited Schwani is.
I know.
You may. I just like talking about cute. These types
it's
of things.
Cute.
It's cute.
It's cute.
It's cute.
Look how cute the little Schwani is talking about the space program.
So, you know what else, boys and girls?
What else?
Primetime network television omitted its regular broadcast during this in order to bring continuing coverage because we didn't know if these men were going to come back.
Sure.
And they didn't know until the very end because that explosion damaged the heat shield that the command module needed to come back through the atmosphere. Otherwise, it would have burned up. And then they didn't know if the parachutes were going to open, but they all did. So,
and that spawned the movie Apollo 13.
After Jim Lovell wrote the book.
Yeah.
But you're right. And your friend, the great Tom Hanks.
I wouldn't exactly say my friend.
Well, you've talked with him enough times.
Yeah, many times.
But. And played Jim Lovell. Talk about going to see a movie. I went back to see that about 6 times.
You know what I've never done? I've never said, hey, Tom, would you like a nice hard butterscotch candy?
Did you make any deviled eggs for him?
That's the sign. No. So there, you're right. Right in the same spot with him. Happy Palm Sunday. We continue now with the Week in Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Good morning to you, Dr. Silver.
Good morning, sir. How are you, Dean?
Doing very well. Wanted to start off with a story that we reported, I think it was Friday morning. It had been released that actor Eric Dane, who starred on Grey's Anatomy. He is part of the show. Euphoria now announced that he has amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. He says, I feel fortunate I'm able to continue working and look forward to returning to the set of Euphoria next week. I ask for privacy at this time. Can you talk to me a little bit about Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS, what it is, what are symptoms? We know, you know, the story obviously from Lou Gehrig, the baseball player, but So many people have suffered from this. I learned quite a bit about it from my many decades of co-hosting the Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Telethon. It is a neuromuscular disease, is it not?
It is, Dean. It's a horrible disease. You know, people often think of that final speech where Garrick says, today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Right.
And, you know, it's just the irony of that, because it is a horribly unlucky disease. It is a motor neuron disease. And what that simply means is you have two types of nerves in your body, essentially. Nerves that sense, so they take in information from the environment and tell you, you know, if you're feeling cold or hot, if something is soft on your skin or prickly. And then you have nerves that are motor nerves, which tell your body to do things, you know, tell your hand to grip the pencil or tell your mouth to speak. And so it's those motor nerves that are primarily effective. And it's a slow progressive degeneration of those nerves. I guess slow is, I guess, in the eye of the beholder. But we don't have a cure, unfortunately. And the life expectancy, it does range. But the average person that contracts ALS, it's going to be between 2 and 5 years. So that's, you know, not a great prognosis, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know if there's been new research or, you know, progress that has been made. But I've known people who have had ALS. I bet I've known them for like 20 years, which I think is unusual, right, for somebody to have been diagnosed and to be, you know, functioning, perfectly functioning since then. Or maybe it's just that everyone's different, I guess.
Around 10% of people that contracted live for over 10 years. So that is sort of the bright side of things. You think about Stephen Hawking, that was the gentleman in the wheelchair with the electronic voice. So he, you know, he lived over 20 years. So you can certainly learn to live with the disease. But again, you know, that's the exception, not the rule.
How does one contract amyotrophic lateral sclerosis?
Well, we don't know. We really don't know. There's generally thought to be two ways of getting the disease. One is the sporadic pathway, and that's thought to be 90% of at least cases in the U.S. where there's not a clear cause. And then the other 10% have classically been filed under the familial bucket or genetic or inherited. But we know that it's not contagious, number one. And number two, we truly don't know where it comes from. And it may be more genetically related than we think. We may just kind of not know all the various ways that the genes can kind of play into it. So I think it's still very much a black box, and we don't know a whole lot about it.
Now, Eric Dane is 52 years old, functioning. He's returning to work next week. Is that unusual for somebody that age to get it? Is there an age where you're more likely than another to show symptoms?
Yeah, so he's right kind of in the middle of the road there. The average age of diagnosis is around 55. Most people are diagnosed between the ages of 40 and 70, although it can be diagnosed in younger people in their 20s or 30s. But yes, initially it may be kind of mild. You know, he may have had kind of a subtle symptom, went to the doctor, ended up going down the rabbit hole of a workup, and then they made the diagnosis, which, by the way, is a tricky diagnosis to make. It does or can mimic a variety of other conditions. So I guess in the sense that they caught it early and he's still functional is a good thing. But I think it doesn't play necessarily into his long term. How fast it's going to kind of unravel, we just don't know.
Yeah, and it's just a breakdown of your ability to control the muscles in your body, both, you know, muscles in your arms and legs, you know, we think about, but the subtle muscles that control your voice and swallowing and, you know, like as you said, the motor functions, it's a slow breakdown of that until you're just not able to function anymore, correct?
That's it. It's pretty pretty brutal, because that's kind of how it goes. You just sort of disintegrate from a function standpoint. But yeah, my heart goes out to the guy, and my hope is that as we get further down the road, that research kind of takes us in a direction of treatment or cure, a ways away from that.
Yeah, yeah, very sad that there still is no cure, and it's not even close to really changing very much. I want to get right to phone calls and texts, because we've got lots of them already on the phone line. And that includes Joel, who is on our phone line at 312-981-7200. Good morning. You're on WGN.
Yes, good morning. I'm 86, and I have an autoimmune condition. Through a series of mistakes, I got two COVID shots within 10 days.
Whoops.
How much trouble am I in, if any?
Whoops.
Hey, Joel, thanks for the question. I guess, but I would ask, when did this happen, if you're able to share that?
Well, it just happened over the past 10 days. The most I got the recent shot on Friday, and it was a series of mistakes, and I'm right in the middle of all of them. But I have to blame it on my 86 years of life, and I messed up. And I'm just wondering what I'm in for.
Yeah, any serious repercussions as a result of that, Doc?
Yeah, you know, one is that in terms of the safety, the risks are actually pretty low. You know, the effectiveness of the dose may be less. And that's kind of the biggest risk, is that that you don't get the coverage that you thought you would. And that's going to be difficult to track. We won't ever really know that. It's just kind of an underlying risk. And there's no evidence that I've read of that that for someone with an autoimmune disease, perhaps you have a flare of your underlying condition, and we don't have to get into the specifics of your particular disease state. But what I would say is be on the lookout for a flare of your underlying chronic disease. And certainly if you start having symptoms that could be consistent with that, maybe talk to your autoimmune doctor, whoever that is, whether it's a rheumatologist or your primary care doctor, just to think about how you might go about treating it. So I'm sorry it happened, but I think the risk, again, I think is very low that anything bad is going to occur.
What does a flare mean?
Yeah, so a flare would just be when you have a chronic disease, particularly people with autoimmune diseases, they have episodes where the autoimmune disease essentially flares up, or they have significant symptoms of that disease. So I'll give an example. If you have a rheumatoid arthritis, for instance, and you have a rheumatoid arthritis flare, you might wake up with swollen knuckles, painful joints, fever, body aches, that sort of thing. And folks that have the disease typically know what that means and know when to call their doctor about it.
All right. I hope that helps you out, Joel. It sounds like you're going to do okay. Appreciate,
yes.
Yeah, appreciate your call. And we'll take more for Dr. Silver when we come right back. 9:57, we have time for one quick text from the 847 area code. I'm sorry, 224. Dr. Silver, what are the early symptoms of Lou Gehrig's disease?
A tough question to ask. They're so generic, or certainly crossover with other, as I mentioned, other conditions. But weakness in a limb, so weakness in your arms and leg, or difficulty swallowing, twitching in a limb could be associated with it, and certainly clumsiness, you know, if you're dropping your keys or having trouble with, you know, regular day-to-day type activities of dexterity that suddenly become difficult, that would be a concern. And then on the sort of systemic side, sort of general symptoms, fatigue, or even broad swings in mood or emotions. So it's very tricky to diagnose. But certainly if you see something, say something. If you're feeling funny or you notice that your loved one is having unusual symptoms, definitely good idea to get it checked out.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid, but always good to talk to you. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday. Doc, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
Quite a bit of reaction to the question that we put out there in the last hour. If they were going to remake the movie Ten Commandments today, you know, with all the new special effects and technology, it would be spectacular. Who would be a good Moses to play now?
Yeah, what have you heard?
Interesting choices on our text line. Willem Dafoe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Michael Fassbender. He would be a good Moses. I would go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro Pascal. John Hamm as Moses. He hosted SNL last night.
Right.
I actually did think of that. He would. He might be good. Someone said, Dean, how about Mel Gibson?
There's your friend.
My friend Mel Gibson. I think he's a little too old for the role. Maybe, like, you know, toward the end of the movie. Somebody said David Letterman because he's already got
the beard.
That's interesting.
No one's mentioned my thought yet.
What's yours?
How about Jack Black?
Wow.
He's got the beard.
Rock and roll Moses.
Yeah, a little rock and roll Moses.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Shouldn't he do SNL the week before?
He did.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes, he did.
See, I'm aware of what's going on.
Very hep. You are one hep cat.
I have to interject something here, though.
Yes, sir.
Because you cut me off before we finished the far-flung forecast.
I cut you off many times.
I know. You enjoy it, too.
I do.
But you cut me off before I was able to give the weather conditions in Huntsville, Alabama. Oh,
it's warm.
Yeah, it's a nice day.
What is it?
It's a nice day. It's sunny and 53.
We stopped the program for
a high of 71 today. Love to have highs in the 70s here. We may later in the week.
All right. Well, you just cut me off from the best suggestion that we've had if they were going to remake the Ten Commandments.
What's the best one now?
Somebody said they would like to see it done with marionettes. I would like that. Many suggestions coming in now. Would be a good Moses if they remade the Ten Commandments. Somebody suggested George Clooney. I don't think so. Isn't he too old? He's too old to play Moses. Needs to be someone a little younger. Denzel Washington. I think Denzel would be an awesome Moses, except I think he's too old.
Really?
Yeah, he's 70 years old.
Oh, okay. He's older than I thought.
Somebody said Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell.
You only have five commandments left.
Right.
He dropped the other tablet.
Leo DiCaprio. I think he's too old, too.
Oh, come on.
I think he's too old to play Moses.
Well, how old was Charlton Heston when he played Moses?
I don't know. I've got to look it up.
All right.
That's a lot of work. I got to go to the Google machine. And Robert Downey Jr.? No way. As Moses? No way. Christian Bale? Maybe. I like this one. Bradley Cooper.
You know, I thought of him.
I think Bradley Cooper would be a good
Moses. I thought of him, yeah.
Mark Wahlberg might be good. I don't know if I could picture a Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch taking over that role. I'm not sure. I do like this suggestion. Somebody also suggested a remake of the Ten Commandments using the Muppets.
Oh, yeah.
That would be very interesting. Anyway, we move on. Good or bad, happy or sad. The great Al Green, 74 years old today. Did I ever tell you my Al Green story?
No, I don't know that one.
I went to Memphis, Tennessee once, many a year ago. I was going to do a documentary. I work on a documentary on Elvis Presley. And I arrived on the 3rd of July, And, you know, I'm sitting in my hotel. I was at the famous Peabody Hotel in downtown Memphis. You know, the Peabody Hotel where they have those ducks? Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you ever heard of that?
No, I just know Mr. Peabody and Sherman from...
Twice a day at the famous Peabody Hotel. It's an old hotel in downtown Memphis.
Yeah.
They have ducks that they bring from the roof in the elevator to a fountain in the lobby. And then the ducks swim around all day. And then at the end of the day, they parade the ducks back upstairs again.
I did not know that.
And it's a big deal. Like, tourists come and take pictures, and the ducks. So that's, I literally changed hotels. It's like, I've got things to do. I can't be sitting around waiting for the
ducks.
Well,
did you happen to see Chelveston by any chance?
I did not
there?
See Chelveston. Okay. He was under contract to a different studio. So anywho, it's the 3rd of July. I'm in Memphis, got nothing to do. I'm going to go walk around historic Beale Street is right down the block. You know, the birthplace of the blues.
And sure, so yeah.
I go down there and there's a bunch of clubs, you know, that are hopping. But somebody said you need to go down on the riverbanks of the mighty Mississippi, which is also just a few blocks away. I walk down there and they're getting ready to do their fireworks display.
For the 4th of July. You're there on the 3rd.
For the 4th of July. And I go and get, they have stands, little kiosks set up in the park where you can go get a pulled pork sandwich on white bread and a grape pop.
Oh.
And a grape pop. You go get it on a little thin paper plate, and it's a mess. It's all over the place, and it's so delicious. And I'm sitting there on the banks of the river having a barbecue sandwich and a grape pop, waiting for the fireworks to start. Suddenly, lights come on, a barge right in the middle of the Mississippi River. It's Al Green.
Oh, really?
Wow. And he does like an hour-long concert right in the middle of the river.
Boy, your timing was great.
Right?
Yeah.
He does the concert. Concert ends. I'm done licking up my fingers. Fireworks go off. It was a fantastic 4th of July celebration.
Is he from there?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What do you want, a biography of everyone that I refer to on the show today?
I was just wondering if they featured him because he was home talent.
What are you, Ken Burns all of a sudden?
I can't even ask a question anymore.
Here, wait,
I'm going to go get a butterscotch candy. I
wish I had a butterscotch candy.
You already did.
This is so much work. I'm exhausted. He was born in Forest City, Arkansas.
Oh, he's from Arkansas. Okay.
Yeah. Or Arkansas.
Arkansas.
If you will. What was the other one that you asked for? What was the other bio that you asked for?
That's the only one.
You did just a minute ago.
No, I asked if Mel Gibson. Al Green was from Memphis.
No, before you asked something. I said,
Charlton Heston. I wondered when he was born because you were saying that certain actors were.
How old was he when he
did? How old was he when they did the movie?
When he did the movie. Okay. Well, let's see. Oh, he was born in Evanston. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
I did not know that.
Went to school at Northwestern.
I knew, but I didn't know he was born in Evanston. He was born in 1923.
Okay.
So 23, and the movie was made in 56.
He was 33 years old.
Yeah, see, a lot of these guys are way too old to play.
Okay, all right. How old was Edward G. Robinson when he made the
movie? Yeah, see? Yeah, none of your business, see? Put a couple of slugs in you. That's what I'll do. Oh, give me a dame. Yeah, see? Who's your messiah now?
Yeah. Oh. Okay, that's... Not going there.
Yeah, see?
We're not going there.
Nope. But this Al Green song that I just played, Let's Stay Together, true classic of all time. If only there was somebody on the show today who actually brought in some classic vinyl records. If only we had somebody on the show.
Well, you know, it's like, funny you should
like
say
that. Today.
It's that, funny you should say that.
That would really be something.
It's funny you should say that.
Pray tell.
because I have done just that.
You have done that? You have actually done that?
In honor of our wonderful producer.
Whose final day is today?
Our salute to Jack Hammer.
That's right. Today is producer Jack's last day on the Sunday show.
Is he awake in there now? Yeah. Usually he goes to sleep there.
He's not at the control board. Our new producer,
Frank,
will be taking over next week. Frank is actually at the controls. But Jack is, he's like co-piloting. Jack's overseeing, I guess, right?
Supervisory role.
Supervisory role.
Yeah.
Is your mic working in there, Jack?
I guess not.
Sound like
Well, you gave away the secret because I told him I had something to for him and didn't specify, but you did. So that's all right, though. That's good. Let him know what I brought in because he was always talking about
he had never heard
Sergeant Pepper. We talked about 45 RPM records.
You know what it is? I think Jack is just so emotional.
He can't
speak. That he can't speak right
of
now.
Leaving the show, he's afraid he's going to.
He's going to break up.
That wouldn't help his sports persona.
No.
So he's going to take over. He's going to be the producer of John Landecker's show, also doing lots of sports stuff in the evening. So big step for him, but he's going to be leaving us here on Sunday morning. Are you okay? Have you composed yourself?
Yeah, I'm ready.
There he is.
I saw him tearing up earlier today. Schwani, what do you have?
Well, I have several, not one, but several 45 RPM records.
Now, do you even know what that is, Jack?
Is it like a vinyl?
Well, yeah.
Better than a vinyl.
Yeah, that's right. Do you know what the concept is behind these?
Don't you play music, or is they just people just collect them now?
Well, they collect them now. Yes.
I use them as coasters in my house.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah. Boy, I'll tell you what, Dean. I'll bet you remember fly cueing those 45 RPM records.
Slip cue.
Yeah,
yeah, baby.
Oh, I'll tell you, some of these are almost 60 years old.
Yeah, man.
So I will bring these in after I do my newscast.
He brought in some actual records for you to see.
I brought in some actual vinyl
records.
What you need to know, you need to inspect the records because on the front is written Schwan Homeroom 1.
Yeah.
And there's also
index cards.
His own filing system.
Yeah, he's got index cards in with each record.
Yep.
Was this for your pretend radio station?
It was
station?
For the pretend radio station.
Yeah, so we knew where to find
the
records.
Music director would pull the records in advance of the program.
Yeah, who was the music director?
Me.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Nice.
Dork.
I was going to take it a step further and try to find some pictures of it, but they're in a box somewhere now, but... I'll bring in the records to show you, Jack.
He brought in a Sergeant Pepper's album.
Oh, and the original,
an actual 33 1/3 RPM vinyl record album
from 1967.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I was -30 in 1967.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. -30.
But I have a sampling, actually, of the 45s I brought in. I have. Or two original Beatles. I have two original Rolling Stones. A Motown record.
Dork.
And an example of a Chicago group that made national dork. Prior to Chicago.
Dork. Dork.
Say it a little louder. Just go ahead. So I will show these to you here when I'm done with the
That Chicago album that you brought in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the CTA album.
That's the CTA album.
That's when they were called. That's when the group Chicago was called Chicago Transit Authority before the actual CTA threatened to sue them for stealing.
Then they had to change the name.
And
yeah,
they changed it to Chicago. But that album was just inducted into the National Registry of the Library of Congress.
It should have been inducted a long time ago.
Very true.
Yes. Yeah. But
I'll bet they don't have index cards in their album.
<Mm-mm>. But the other Chicago-based group that I brought in that had a national recording contract was the Buckinghams. Oh. You remember the Buckinghams? Jack, I'm sure you have all their records,
oh,
don't
yeah.
you? Yeah.
They're awesome.
He's just practicing his fake enthusiasm right now for when you actually show him.
Yeah, lineup. Right.
Right now he's planning on how can he get out of the
building. Conveniently leave the building.
How can he get out of the building without seeing you?
They're awesome.
So he doesn't have to look at them. Yeah. And Frank, who's sitting right behind Jack right now, is going, I wonder if it's too late.
I
wonder if I can get on
somebody
else's show.
Do you need an assistant producer somewhere else?
I wonder if the labor guys need a new producer. So have you had many conferences with John Rickards Landecker yet?
Yeah, I've been filling in on his show around hockey.
Oh, okay.
He actually brought out the turntable on Thursday for the Sunshine.
See?
Because it's like national vinyl.
Yesterday was National Record Store Day.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, so the timing is just right on this.
Oh, man.
What did he play?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, good. Well, all right. It's good to know that you won't be paying as much attention on that show as you have been on this one.
Ho, 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 it's my
right, it is 10:37, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, time for our Week in Theater segment. Probably one of the hottest, big, kind of traditional musical theater shows in town this week is Moulin Rouge, the musical, that is at the Cadillac Palace Theater in the Theater District downtown. This show is constantly changing. It is an adaptation of the motion picture Moulin Rouge that was here in Chicago maybe a year ago, something, and now has come back. But they're constantly changing the songs, working songs in, working songs out. So it is playing here in the Chicago area for the next couple of weeks and something that you might want to take a look at. I wanted to focus, though, on a show also that has been going on for quite a while here in the Chicago area. It is Dennis Watkins Magic Parlor, which I think I first saw over at the Chopin Theater, but has been also in the downtown theater district, now partnered up with the Goodman Theater and Pettorino's Restaurant at 50 West Randolph Street. The one, the only, Dennis Watkins is in studio with us this morning. Welcome back. Nice to see you here.
Thank you for having me. Great to see you. Good morning.
Yeah, you were here. You were with us. You've been here before, but I think you were last with us when we did one of our Tree Time Christmas shows.
Right.
Out in Lake Barrington, and you dazzled the crowd with some amazing magic back then.
It was an incredibly festive holiday event. I loved that event.
Yeah, it's nothing but Christmas trees everywhere.
I know, it's glorious.
How can it not be? Talk to me a little bit about the resurgence that magic seems to be having right now. There are magic shows, live shows. There are television shows. It's going crazy in Las Vegas.
It really is. It is all over the place. In a way, you know, I'm a third generation magician, and my granddad would have killed to have a magic marketplace like there is now.
Yeah.
He ran a magic shop for 30 years. And if this many people had been this interested in magic at that time, it would have been crazy, right? There is more magic going on in Chicago, I think, than there ever has been. More theaters opening up, more shows that you can see, more events that feature magic. And you're right, it's all over the Strip, too, in Vegas. Some really remarkable shows are running. And then it's all over TV. I mean, it's done. People ask, at the Magic Parlor, we do a VIP experience where we sit around a card table after the show and do some close-up stuff. And people ask some questions. And one of the things they ask the most is, how have all the TV shows and the proliferation of magic on the internet made it harder for you to do your job? And the truth is, I think they just make it easier, right? More people are learning that magic is a great night out than they've ever had known before, right? I mean, think 20 years ago, Dean. 20 years ago, if someone asked you to picture a magician, I bet you pictured one of two things. You pictured someone like David Copperfield, mm-hmm. or the guy
Harry Houdini,
or Harry Houdini, one of the big
came to my mind,
right? One of the big icons of stage magic,
right? Yeah.
Or maybe you picture the performer who did your kid's sixth birthday party, yeah. and really nothing in between,
there,
right?
Very, very little in between. There was a guy that lived across the street from me. His name was Tom, and every once in a while, for all the kids in the neighborhood, he'd bring his little magic table outside.
Right.
And he would do tricks for us. It was just, you know, a guy, just a guy. But that was like my first exposure.
Right.
To it all. And then the Houdinis, the David Copperfields.
The big, wild, famous celebrity magicians.
Celebrities.
Right?
But also for us here in Chicago, the late, great Marshall Brodeen.
Oh, my Lord. Yes.
Who was a regular on the Bozo Show.
Right.
Both as... Marshall, the magician, master magician, and TV magic cards. I think we all had his TV magic cards.
Absolutely.
Or his magic sets that he marketed both for himself and other magicians. But then he became this character called
Wizzo.
Wizzo.
Right.
Who did magic tricks.
That's right.
That mostly worked.
And that, but also during that time, in the 60s through 80s, there were a lot of magic bars opening in Chicago,
yeah.
and it was sort of a little surge of close-up magic for grown-up audiences in Chicago, sure. places like Shulian's or the New York Lounge, right? Yeah. These were places that grown-ups could go see magic as part of their entertainment for night out, and then those slowly died away,
yeah.
right? And then now, with America's Got Talent and Penn & Teller Fool Us and magic on the internet everywhere, David Blaine's new show on National Geographic, right? These things,
mind-blowing, that
right?
David Blaine guy,
isn't it amazing?
He might be the devil.
Have you watched that new series?
I have. It's stunning.
Wild, isn't it?
He's
way braver than I am. I won't do that stuff. But it is, these shows have shown people that magic is out there and it's quality entertainment for grown-up audiences. And now people are flocking to it in new and exciting ways. And Chicago can give them a sort of wide breadth of magic between all the different venues and shows.
Yeah, which brings us back to you and the Magic Parlor. Explain what this is.
So the Magic Parlor is a sort of speakeasy feeling venue underneath Petarino's in the same building as the Goodman Theater. I have been running the show. You were right. It started 15 years ago at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park, right? And then we moved it over to the Palmer House, where we ran in a small ballroom for about 12 years. And then now I've partnered with Goodman Theater and Petarino's to put a little close-up magic theater in their space, in their building. So in October of 2023... we took over the space underneath Petarino's that had been the banquet space for 20 years. Mm. We ripped it apart. We turned it into a close-up magic theater and bar. And we're open six shows a week, Thursday through Sunday, at our new venue there that we've been running since October of 2023. So I guess we're about 500 shows in.
That's amazing. That's that's magic itself, that you've been able to sustain this. And these are not the most easy times for live performances.
They really aren't.
For a long time, especially when you were first starting this.
Right.
People didn't want to come downtown. People didn't want to leave their houses.
They didn't.
And go anywhere. But, you were persistent with it.
Well, and, we've had the opportunity to partner with really great folks. The Goodman Theater is a remarkable theater, and they're having a really great moment. And I was lucky enough to partner with them and Petarino's, which has been serving the theater audience for decades, right there in downtown, right?
Yep.
So coming out of pandemic, a remarkable opportunity sort of fell in my lap, and I got to work with some really great partners who would help the show grow rather than sort of stagnate in the midst of all the chaos.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I'm glad that it's working out so well. What kind of magic can people see when they come to the Magic Parlor? What can they expect?
Folks can expect close-up sleight of hand and theatrical mind reading. I'm a third-generation magician, and my granddad was my teacher, and he was a close-up performer. And so what we get at the Magic Parlor is the magic that made me fall in love with the art when I was a kid. It's close-up magic where you, the audience, actually get to make choices and create things that drive the action, right? The audience is central to the experience. It's why it's an art that doesn't live as well on your screen as it might between the two of us, right? So we get a real audience and we involve them in every step of the magic, which sounds intimidating to people, right? They're like, am I going to go be in this show? And the answer is yes, but in a way that you're made to feel like a magician. Yeah, you're not made to feel foolish or embarrassed.
It's not like going to a Don Rickles show.
Heck no, right? You're my guest. I'm going to host you for the night and make you feel magical, or at least I'm going to try.
Yeah. When Dennis came into the studio, he asked me to write down a few things that he has not seen. And when we come back from the break, we'll do a little on the radio magic, or mind reading, I guess. Is it mind reading or magic?
Maybe a mix of both when we get back.
Why not? We'll take that and also some very interesting calls for you on our text line.
Oh, awesome.
312-981-7200, our weekend theater segment, sponsored by Lyric Opera's Wondrous Sound. And our weekend theater segment focuses in on the Magic Parlor. Dennis Watkins, The Magic Parlor, which is 50 West Randolph downtown, lower level of Pettirino's Restaurant, part of the Goodman Theater complex. It's right down the street from Moulin Rouge that I was just talking about a minute ago, part of the downtown theater district, and Dennis is here with us today. I want to jump into a couple of texts because people are asking about your show. And someone's from the 630 says, is your show good for a 10-year-old boy who has an interest in magic? Seems like that would be a perfect show for a 10-year-old.
I think it is. You know, we've told people that are coming to the show that we recommend ages 10 or 12 and up, right? And that's just because there's nothing inappropriate for younger audiences, but it's a show that's written for a grown-up audience. And so the 4, the 5, the 6-year-olds that you might picture going to a kid's magic show don't make it through the whole thing. But by the time they're 10, 11, 12, their imaginations are ripe for the kind of magic that we do at that show, and they're really in it.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to do some on-air magic here today. And I'll let you set it up.
Yeah, let's dive in. We're going to start with a little bit of a warm-up. Is a warm-up okay?
Sure.
I'll need one. It's Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Take that, Dean. Can you reach it? That's a six-sided game die, right?
All right.
And just make sure there's nothing strange or unusual. You're welcome to roll a couple numbers if you want. But
dice.
All good?
Yeah.
All right, so this is what you're going to do. Seem good? There's a 4 and then a 2.
The sound effect.
Yeah, right. I love the sound effects. And then a 1.
Audio for me, yeah.
All good?
Yeah.
All right, this is what you're going to do. I want you to pick a number, 1 through 6.
Okay.
It doesn't matter to me what it is. I want you to put the die on the desk in front of you with your number up so you can see it.
All right.
And then just cover it up with both hands.
Oh, okay.
Now, Dean, I saw that one. So you change a different one. I'll look this way. And when you're done, just say done.
Okay, I'm done.
You're done? Yeah. Okay. Is it covered up?
I put a piece of paper over it.
Perfect. All right, great.
You can't see it.
So, but you know your number.
Yeah.
Picture it.
Yes.
And just look here into my eyes. And when I say go, count out loud from 1 to 6.
Okay.
And give me your best poker face. Are you ready?
Am I counting to my number or
all the way to 6?
1 to 6.
All the way to 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, see, that was a really good poker face, actually. Yep. And you folks at home, you couldn't see, but he kept a very straight face. He kept his eyes on mine. He only blinked once, and he blinked on a 5, which would make most people think that's the tell. But it's not a 5. It's a 3. Is your number a 3?
My number is a 3.
Your number is a 3, right? See,
my
there you go, Dean.
My number is a 3.
Great job. So this time, I'm going to look away.
I was being so stoic on my 3.
You were. You'd be a great poker player. I don't know if you play poker.
I'm
going to look away, and I want you to roll a number this time, because randomization is key, and that's what dice are for.
Right.
And when you see it, cover it up. But here's the thing. If you don't like it, you can roll again. Just let me know when you've settled on one that
I've
you like.
I've rolled, and I've covered it up again.
Okay, great. So picture this number. And when I say go this time, I want you to just count from 1 to 6 in your head. Not even out loud. Just keep your eyes on mine.
Right.
When you get to 6, say done.
This is great for radio. Here we go.
Right, you ready? Go. Okay. You don't have to finish, Dean. I think it's a 5. Is that one a 5?
It is a 5.
Great. See? Great work. See, we'll give it one more shot. This is the hard way. Roll a number.
You might be the devil.
Maybe a little bit. Roll another one and make sure it's covered up when you're happy with the one you get.
All right.
You do it?
Yep.
Is it covered? You like this one?
I love this
Great.
One.
This time, just
You're
picture
never going to get this one.
Well, I might. Just,
You're never going to get
Don't count. Don't say anything.
Yes.
Just picture it. Like the actual face of the right. die with the, oh, yes. this. It's just one dot. It's a one. Is
it
that a
is
one?
A one.
All right. We're doing great, Dean. We're doing great.
Wow.
So now we're going to shift gears. I'll take that. I just want you to pick. I want you to think of a number. There are 52 cards in a pack
Some
of cards.
Sort of magic die that he has. Transmitting signals to him.
To my brain space. Yes. Right? It's your magical brain, Dean.
It's definitely not that.
So let's try something slightly different. Think of there are 52 cards in a pack,
yes.
right? You just think of any number between 1 and 52. You're the magician here. Have fun
number
with this,
and,
right?
Number and the suit?
No, just the number between 1 and 52.
Okay.
Any
I
number.
It. I got it.
Got it? What is it?
You want me to say?
Yeah, tell me.
It's 8.
8. You've chosen 8. Any reason you chose 8?
No, not especially.
No, there's a pack of cards that's been sitting between us this whole time, and we're going to take them straight out of the box, straight out of the box, right? And actually, I think we missed a couple. We'll put those right here.
All right.
And you said 8
is
your number.
Yeah.
So without shuffling or cutting the cards in any way, Dean, we're just going to count. From the top, you'll see the face of every card. That's the ace of spades. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the eighth card is that one. That's the three of hearts, right?
Correct.
Now, the one before is the ace of diamonds. The one after is the eight of diamonds. The next is the six of clubs. The nine. If you'd chosen a higher number, it would have been one of those or a low number, one of these. Now, also sitting here is my wallet, Dean, and inside is one playing card. There's only one. Can you tell us what?
Flip it over. Yeah, you've had one.
The three of hearts?
That's the three
That's
of hearts.
The same one you chose.
Yeah.
Well done. See, this is good. This means we're warm, Dean. We're
okay.
good. We're
All right.
good.
All right.
So I want you to think back in your life to a moment.
Yes.
A moment that I asked you to think of before we went live,
I
and I had you write down one thing, and I want to be really clear with the people listening. You didn't share that thought with anybody. There's no way that I or anyone here in the studio has seen it.
I haven't even thought about it in decades.
Great. Great, great, great. And nobody here knows it. There's no way anyone can know it.
No way here anyone could know this.
Think back to that moment of your first romantic kiss.
Yes.
Yes?
Yep.
You remember it?
I do.
It's a key. It's a foundational memory for most of us.
I never forget it.
Right?
Yeah.
I want you to think back. Do you remember the name of the person?
Yes.
Picture that.
Yeah.
Imagine that they're standing across from you, kind of right where I am, and you can see them, right?
Right.
And imagine their name is written in the air between us.
Okay.
When I say go,
scan
that name left to right silently in your mind. You ready?
Okay.
And I'll snap as you go to give you a tempo.
Yep.
Go. Good. Good, good, good. I think there were 8 letters there. Are there 8 letters there?
There are 8 letters.
There are 8 letters. And sort of a, would you say it's like a split name? It's two names sort of put together?
I would say it's like two names put together.
Okay, say it in your mind.
Okay.
Good. Again? Yeah? Say it over and over on a loop, Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. You're doing it. Great. Good. Keep saying Mary Beth, Mary Beth, Mary Beth, Mary Beth. Was her name, in fact?
Look at the little note that I wrote in your wallet.
Oh, okay, sure. It's in the wallet.
I wrote it down, and you told me to write it down in your wallet.
You wrote Mary Beth.
Mary Beth.
Mary Beth.
How about that?
It's a remarkable thing, sir.
You are the devil.
Well, you just have a very powerful magical brain, Dean. It sends the thoughts across.
That's stunning. This is what you can see. David Watkins.
Or Dennis Watkins. David's my younger brother, actually.
I'm sorry. Dennis Watkins. You couldn't read that part, could you? That I could get it right. Dennis Watkins, the Magic Parlor. It's at 50 West Washington. 50 West. You've completely thrown me off.
Well, now see, I'm just all up in those thoughts. That's all.
50 West Randolph Street in downtown Chicago. People want to get more info on the show, Dennis. What is the best way to do that?
TheMagicParlorChicago.com.
All right. I predict we're going to a break and then the news next. If you could go over the details again of the breaking news, the terrible story about Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro being evacuated from his house.
Yes. As a matter of fact, he and his family were awakened by authorities around 2 this morning. That would be Eastern time. Because there was a fire at the house and they were evacuated from the residence. This is the governor's official residence in Pennsylvania now. This would be in Harrisburg. After someone set fire to the building. This is an arson investigation now. and taking place overnight on the first night of the Jewish holiday of Passover. And Governor Shapiro and his family had celebrated that evening. No one was injured, but the reports are that there was a lot of damage at the building.
Very disturbing that it was apparently arson. Very disturbing that it was on the first night of Passover. Very disturbing that just something like that, you know, is going on. Presuming it was a reaction to the politics of Governor Shapiro, et cetera. I mean, we really don't know that much about it yet.
Yeah, further investigation is ongoing here. You know, an arson investigation and where, in fact, the fire was. The fact that his family was not aware of the fire, they were awakened by authorities, is also a point of interest in this story.
Interesting that somebody could get that close to the governor's
mansion. That's right. Yes, right.
Although, now that I think of it, though, the governor's mansion in Springfield, it's pretty available, isn't it?
It is.
Pretty much out in the open.
It is open, pretty much out in the open, and it's not at all far from the Abraham Lincoln home there. Yeah. In Springfield, certainly within a couple blocks.
It's not like it's behind gates or
anything. No, it's not cordoned off at all like the White House.
Don't know if that's the case in Pennsylvania for Governor Shapiro.
Yeah.
But
the investigation is to determine whether this was an arson fire and just to, you know, going on those points that we have here from early reports.
Main thing is nobody's hurt.
Right.
But, you know, an act like this, an act of arson, which could have been deadly.
Yes.
Is more than disturbing, especially on the night of a significant holiday for Jewish people.
So, correct.
So,
yeah.
We need to learn more about it, you know, before we talk more about it, I guess. But please keep us updated. And we'll take a quick break. The show goes on after this. We had Dennis Watkins from the Magic Parlor on the show in the last segment. Schwani actually came out of the newsroom to watch the magic up close. You were a little fascinated by that.
Well,
you?
I was, and it was interesting that it was, you know, as magic tricks are, visual. I was interested in seeing how this was going to play out on the radio. So,
well, I mean, Dennis knows how to do magic for radio. It's not anything that, you know, required visuals, because he did ask me to write down the name of my first kiss right when he walked into the room. He asked me to write it down, turn it over, don't let him see it. So, you know, I knew the dice thing. I think it all made sense on the radio, right?
It did. Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it was fascinating, you know, for all of you who never pay attention to anything that's going on the show. Like, yeah, he had your attention. I may have to have a magician in here every week.
Every week, just to keep me awake? Is that what you're saying?
Pay attention. Yeah. You know who got all the attention yesterday? It was the cast of the movie Breakfast Club, the 1980s classic. For the first time in 40 years, the entire main cast all got together at C2E2 over at McCormick Place yesterday. This is the comic book and entertainment pop culture convention that continues at McCormick Place. But they were all there. Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, Ali Sheedy, Emilio Estevez, and Anthony Michael Hall were all over at McCormick Place. Any fond memories? I mean,
lots.
It's right. It brings back, you know, tons.
Yeah.
Not to mention that it was shot here in Chicago.
Well, that's what it does for me, because actually I was supposed to go to Maine North, which is where it was filmed in Des Plaines. The year that I was supposed to go there, it closed down, and I ended up going to Maine East. I'm very happy that I did. But we used to run, when I was on the cross-country team, we used to run from Maine East to Maine North. It was, you know, a couple miles, and yeah, we would use their track to do some you know, conditioning work and things of that nature. And that's the exact track and football field that Judd Nelson walked across at the very end and threw the fist up. So I'd been on that field and been in that arena there, so to speak. And our Little League teams played baseball right there in the shadows of Main North.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. So, it like, when you're there, you're thinking about the movie.
Yeah. And, you know, it came out the year that I graduated from high school, too. So we could really relate with what was going on.
Yeah, it's perfectly timed for your generation, for sure. But I just remember when that first came out. And, you know, the director, John Hughes, made a movie for the younger generation. You know, it had always been boomers, you know, all about the baby boomers. And then suddenly this Gen Z movie comes out and makes such a big impact, still making a big impact to today. I mean, it's a big deal that all the main cast members got together for the first time in 40 years.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Pretty cool.
It was interesting to hear the interview also that someone had asked them, or this topic came up as to whether or not they'd have a sequel movie or a reunion or a remake of the movie, and they said probably not.
Yeah.
You know, once
good,
once was, you know, that was it, and why spoil a good thing?
Yeah. Exactly.
I would vote against that too.
Sure.
I don't think you want to go back and, you know, ruin that memory. Not good. When we have the 40th anniversary reunion of this show, you think it's going to be a big deal?
It will be.
We'll still be doing it. It won't be a reunion.
40 years from now, we show up at tree time. Anybody here?
You can reprise your role with the bow and arrow.
Oh, that'd be
there. You go.
40 years from now,
there you go.
do the archery bit once again.
Uh-huh.
Only this time, I really do shoot an arrow.
You'll be able to hone your skill between now and then, I guess.
Oh, brother. So I bring this up because I know Schwani is such an advocate of nature. Andy and I found this out.
Yes, we did
when we. When we went on the Alzheimer's walk with Schwani along the lakefront, and he pointed out every single leaf and tree and anything, you know, we could possibly not want to know. That's how we found out. But
we didn't get into the glacial creation of how Lake Michigan came.
Well, before. You know what? I was surprised you didn't get into, naming and pointing out to us the different birds that live along Lakeshore Drive, because, you know,
seagulls.
Well, there are many there,
and pigeons,
as I found out once.
Yes,
at a wedding that was at the Shedd Aquarium, there definitely are seagulls on the lakefront.
One made known his presence,
and one of them mistook my bald head for a target and got me good.
I actually got attacked by a bird.
Really?
On the lakefront there, in that area there. I was minding my own business.
Of course you were.
On a beautiful day, walking, enjoying our lakefront, and all of a sudden I hear this, and this bird started hitting me with their beak on my head.
Oh. What'd you do?
I shoot him away. He came back again, and I continued to
Did
shoot
you
him.
Scream like a girl? I would
No, no, I didn't scream like a girl. No, I used some language. We'll just leave it at that, and the bird went away.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have a fear of, a natural fear of birds.
You know, my mom does, too.
Yeah, my mother did,
I didn't even
too.
Know that until recently.
I think because of the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Yeah.
No, my mom had it. It wasn't because of the movie. It was something that happened to her when she was a girl.
Yeah, I think it's because of the movie. I'm afraid that birds are going to peck my eyes out.
Well, you know, who was it? Tippi Hedren played the character in the movie. He kept shooting one of those scenes over and over again, and she said, enough is enough. And she had some sort of a fear of birds.
Can you blame her?
No.
All those birds?
No.
Ugh. Apparently over at Montrose Harbor, there's all the attention on the Great Lakes piping plovers.
Plovers.
Plovers?
Plovers.
I've heard it both.
I don't even know what they are. But
Ron
I,
Brown just concurred with me.
I also don't want to know. Are they birds that would peck my eyes out? That's all I want.
Maybe if
know.
You showed up.
Try to build a nest on my head.
So is this the point of you making fun of me again in this regard?
I'm not making fun of. How am I making fun of you?
Yeah, right. So you were talking about nature and...
Yeah, see, if you went on a hike with Schwanee, and oh boy, do I ever recommend that to most of you.
most of you.
You'll learn about the leaves and the trees and... I guess the birds as well.
Yeah.
Do these, what are they, plovers?
Is plovers, that plovers? Plovers, yeah. Piping plovers that are a rather rare species. As a matter of fact,
they
were
like
almost
extinct.
But
they like to hang out at Montrose Harbor?
Montrose Harbor. Well, there's a bird sanctuary in that area there. I'm not an ornithologist.
So they're hanging with the other birds?
They're hanging with the other birds, and they have laid eggs there in the past and have given birth, and they're... This group called Chicago Piping Plovers watches very closely every season this time of year. You know, they come back. How cool is this? They come back from parts far away from here.
They go
someplace warm. And then they come back. Then they know right where to go.
And they go right back to Montrose Harbor.
Yeah. Yeah, but they were...
looking for some action over there.
They were, right. They were declared endangered.
Check out that hummingbird over there.
They were declared endangered in the 1980s.
Hey, Robin, I'll be back to pick you up later.
You know, here we are again. I'm trying to give some information, and he's just rambling in the other room.
Check out the red breast on that one.
Oh, hello.
Hey, good looking.
You think they have a Mr. Microphone? Hey, good looking. I'll pick you up around the block.
Why would that? That is fascinating, though, that they come back to the same place.
Hence my interest in all of this. Yeah. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah, hence.
Yes.
Therefore and vis-a-vis.
Therefore and vis-a-vis.
Hey, they got any vultures over there?
I don't know.
Over at the Montrose Harbor?
I don't think so.
There's a conservationist group. That Bird Life International Conservation Organization, and I read their magazine all the time. I love it. they are working on changing the image of the vulture.
Changing the image of the vulture?
Yeah, because most people think, you know, vultures are awful.
And then there's this old saying, the vultures are circling, which is rather ominous.
Well, they, you know, they're kind of known that if there's a decomposing carcass somewhere, that vultures are going to show up and start feeding.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't want to be walking through the desert and suddenly seeing vultures
ahead. Kind of a bad sign, huh?
Yeah. But this conservation group is trying to show that, you know, what nice animals they are, that they are not the deadly animals that we think.
All right, cite some examples here.
Vultures. What am I looking at here? Let me see. Well, I just know that there's this.
See, he doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Well, I could have told you that. I didn't. I knew that at 9:06 today.
I knew it at 9:01.
This organization is trying to clean up the image of the vultures.
You said that.
There are, well...
I was asking for specifics.
What do you want me to do?
Some people may have just tuned in.
In the last 20 seconds.
It's a bird recap. Come on.
What else can I tell you? Vultures have extremely strong stomach acid, so they are able to consume anthrax, botulism, and other bacteria and toxins found in carcasses that would kill any other animal.
And now we know.
Yes, and now you know.
What's not to love of a bird like that? Are they? Do you only find vultures in this? This conservation group is working out of Africa, southern Africa. And so I guess, is that the only place where you find a vulture?
Oh, no. You find them in the American West. And you can find them in open spaces. They are scavengers. They're looking for food.
Washington, D.C.? I know they have some vultures there. Okay, that's all I have to say.
All right. Vultures.
Anything else?
No, you were the one that brought this up.
I can repeat it again if
you were the one.
For those just joining us.
Again, our top story, vultures. They're trying to change the image of vultures. Okay. That's all I got. And it turns out it wasn't that much to begin with. Look, my job is just to kill time here. I don't say anything about quality.
Well, we have 3.5 minutes until my newscast, so.
Well, oddly, we have 3.5 minutes of commercials. Why don't we fill it with that?
It is an interview that we did with Ted Neely, who played Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar back in the day. And, of course, Jesus Christ Superstar, starting off as a stage musical in 1971, went on to become a motion picture, which also co-starred Carl Anderson and Yvonne Elliman, Barry Denon, among others. Well, we've had Ted Neely here on the show with us several times, and as I had mentioned, 10 years ago, he was in town for a special presentation of the movie, and thought it would be a good day here on Palm Sunday to revisit that interview. Jesus Christ Superstar in the movie version of Jesus Christ Superstar, of course, from 1973, right? Is that when it first came out?
Yes.
But before that, on stage, also this historic Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice musical. A man, when you see him, you think of the visual depictions of Jesus that we've all seen all of our lives. So Ted, because he's been on the show so many times, is simply being a nice guy and waving hello at me with both arms extended in the window, kind of waving his arms, trying to get my attention. So I look up and I see Jesus with his arms extended in front of me. And I thought for a moment I was in a better place.
Yeah, I understand.
It's nice to see you.
What a pleasure. Thank
it's always a pleasure. You are truly one of the most nice people that we've had on the
you,
the
you
program.
Know that. I can't help myself.
Well, you've been out at the Hollywood Boulevard in Woodridge,
yes,
for special screenings that they've been having of Jesus Christ Superstar. And you and some of the other cast members, original cast members from the movie, what do people say to you when they come to you, you know, see the movie, to meet you, to say hello? I would imagine that people have a rather profound experience meeting you.
Yes, they do. And what has been the most repeated of all profound moments for me is when people will walk up to me, whether it's a grandfather or a grandmother or the son and daughter or the grandchildren and so on, they will walk up and we make eye contact and tears start to roll down their cheeks and they say, I thank you for giving me the direction for my faith.
Mm. Yeah.
And that wasn't me. That was that movie. That was the music you're talking about. The magnificence of that score that everybody can sing. It just told the story in a very humanistic manner.
So, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the power of the film.
It is.
For sure.
Yes.
For me, my memories are, you know, from first seeing this rather revolutionary film at the time. I think part of it was that I might have been a teenager or in my early 20s then.
Yes.
You know, and it was part of, I think, being that age and wanting to be different than your parents.
Yes.
And this movie told the story of Jesus in a completely different way than I had ever heard.
Yes.
Any time previous in my life. So, I mean, it was a moving, revolutionary moment, I think, for lots of us of a certain age.
Well, I must say that Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber's original concept was to look at Jesus as he walked upon the earth through the eyes of his contemporaries, his friends, his not-so-friendly people, and they all saw him as a man. So you saw the human side of Jesus of Nazareth, and that's what people can so readily relate to.
What kind of flack did you take when this movie first came out? I can only imagine that there might have been a few traditionalists not so happy, not so into the whole rock and roll experience.
Perfect word you chose, flack. You know? Yeah. Especially when we did it on Broadway prior to the film. It was the first time it was done as a live production. And we had people stacked up all around 51st and Broadway protesting our going into the building to work, literally. And we would have to push our way through to get to the doorway. And I would ask people, pardon me, but have you seen our show? And the answer was always no.
Right.
Then I would say, would you please just come in as my guest and watch the production, and then after we finish, talk to me. Tell me what you don't like. I'll talk to the directors. Maybe we can change something. They were very surprised. They would come in. They waited for me in the lobby. After the show, I would walk into the lobby, and their arms would go up into the air. We love this show. It's wonderful. See, and then they'd come back and bring family and friends.
Yeah, that's a very interesting reaction.
And the biggest complaint was it was called Jesus Christ Superstar. They couldn't handle that. Then, second to that, was we hear Jesus is singing with a rock and roll band. Couldn't handle that.
People just thought that was sacrilege?
Absolutely. Yeah. Blasphemy. Absolute, complete contradiction of the Christian faith, the philosophy. But when they saw and heard those songs, loved everything about it.
Yeah. How did it change your life? I mean, you were, a young actor?
I was only six at the time.
You were in third grade.
Yes, it was the baby Jesus from the beginning.
You were the baby Jesus first. Okay. Don't remember that version. Must have come in a little later. I mean, we have actors in here all the time that, you know, take on roles that become signatures to them. They become that.
Yes.
A character forever. I wonder how that has affected you, being typecast in this role, so identified. I shouldn't say typecast because that infers something negative, but you were so identified with this character, but you've been so identified with the character, maybe, on Earth.
Yes. Well, typecast is all right, because if you're going to be typecast in this business, what better person to be typecast
That's
as,
true.
You see?
Right.
It's
right.
All positive. It changed my life absolutely for the better, not only spiritually, because we got to make this film in Israel, and what an amazing experience it was to feel that atmosphere while we were doing what we were doing. Plus which, while I was there, I had the great good fortune of meeting the lovely lady who eventually became my wife. She's one of the dancers in the film. Changed my life in every possible way for the better. And Norman Jewison, our brilliant director, the visionary man who heard these songs and said, I can make a film out of this. He nurtured us as if we were his family the whole time. And there were only two people in the entire company that had been in front of a cinematic camera. Hmm. It was Pontius Pilate, Barry Dinan, Josh Mostel, who played Herod. They'd done parts in various films. The rest of us, first time, you see.
You're all Broadway actors, actors.
Yes, yes. Or street people who look like they could be in Hair, you know. I mean, a lot of us were in the original productions of Hair together, so we were hippie-looking people, you see. And we could all sing and sort of dance, and the timing was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And we all feel that had it not been for the extreme success of Hair, that we might not have had a Broadway show called Jesus Christ Superstar, because Hair opened the door for rock.
For rock musicals.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point in your career that you just, you know, wanted to do a romantic comedy? Wanted to do a drama, something, but
absolutely.
You were so associated with playing Jesus.
There just were no calls for Jesus in the stand-up comedy.
In a rom-com? That would really be pushing the envelope.
More with Ted Neely coming right up. Our A-list interview this week, sponsored by the Lyric Opera of Chicago.
Always a pleasure to have our friend Ted Neely in studio with us when he is in town, best known as Jesus from Jesus Christ Superstar, the movie, from stage versions. Very interesting, Ted. You know, we're talking about this from the perspective of the early 70s when this came out. A text in saying, saw Jesus Christ Superstar for the first time last night on Axis TV on cable channel. Very cool and also very moving. How about that? I mean, you know, all these years later and the... the staying power, obviously, that this story has, but also the performance, the production that, you know, moves people today the first time seeing this movie, and it doesn't feel like they're watching, you know, something that's dated.
No, it is not dated. It is so contemporary in its concept because of Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber wanting to make it a rock opera. The story of the last 7 days in the life of Jesus of Nazareth as seen through the eyes of his friends and his not so many friends, and they all saw him as a man. And it's not challenging the deity, absolutely accepting the deity of the Son of God, but people knew nothing of that until the crucifixion and resurrection. So you're looking at someone like yourself who's going through life questioning his good things and the bad things, yeah, and wanting to do right. And it's a beautiful story, we all know. But put those songs, the magnificent songs that they wrote that anybody can sing.
That's what makes it so relatable, is that you can relate your own life experience to everything that's going on. I think that's the point, right?
Absolutely right.
That's the point of the whole thing. This is Hap on the line at 312-981-7200. Hap, you're on the line with Ted Neely on WGN.
Good morning, Dean, and good morning, Ted. And
hello.
Gosh, how many years, what was it, 1960? I'm trying to remember the year the movie came out.
The movie came out in 1973.
Oh, gosh, I was thinking it was the 60s. Well, whatever the case. The only criticism I really ever heard about the movie or of people responding to it, and even my own feelings, and I'm not terribly religious, is there was no mention of the resurrection. And the resurrection really is part of Jesus' story and what made him so, so unique, if you will. Was there ever any thought of including that, or was it just thought it was just not enough time?
Well, honestly, Hap, it wasn't something that was intentionally left out. What we were dealing with here, Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber concept, was to look at Jesus of Nazareth in the last 7 days of his life as he walked upon the earth as a man prior to resurrection. And they felt that the best thing to do, because they were looking at Jesus the man, was to stay within the humanity of the character, and that seems to be what has connected the world to this for so many years.
Yeah, the essence of the story. Thank you for the call. This is Linda next on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. Boy, I love that movie. It came out when I was just graduating college, so I just loved it. I wanted to mention, I was also a dance student at the time and was really looking forward to seeing the movie because of Twyla Sharp, the choreographer, and the dancing was wonderful as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I mean, it had everything. I mean, it had all your entertainment elements that you wanted.
Yes.
Obviously, this very profound story, but
yes,
a very, very entertaining movie, you know, with all the entertainment elements.
Absolutely. And if you just take the Simon segment alone, which was all that magnificent dance that this lady's talking about, it is absolutely amazing to watch that.
Linda, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Karen's next on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. This is such a thrill. I wanted to tell the story of my children who loved the music, and we played the record all the time. And one afternoon, I was out in front of the house waiting for my second grader to come home from school, and there he came down the street singing at the top of his lungs, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ.
That's wonderful. Is he available to sing today?
No, he's in Omaha.
We could use a good, strong voice.
Oh, yes. Yes, he is.
Yeah, from our vault from 10 years ago, Ted Neely, who is still playing Jesus Christ in productions of Jesus Christ Superstar around the country, most appropriate for this Palm Sunday morning. We'll take a quick break. We've got a Food Time show coming up right after the 12 o'clock news. We have the best listeners. How many times have we said we have the best listeners?
Best in the world.
I think the best of all the shows on WGN.
I happened to be in the producer's booth earlier this morning, and producer Jack was fielding phone calls,
yeah,
and said that someone called and said that you were being too mean to me.
So?
Did I disguise my voice well enough?
And the point is, what?
You get the point. This is why we have the best listeners in the world.
I say we have
because
the best.
They defend me.
I say we have the best listeners because they compliment us. We had like an exceptional. We always have a few. I mean, there's a few people who, you know, they don't like something or whatever. That's some people text in about things that we're not even talking about.
Okay, right.
Some people are like sending texts, giving opinions of tariffs. It's like we haven't even ever talked about that on this show. But
well, we have a newscast, but not outside of
yeah.
The
but
newscast.
I mean, like, you know, for
right, it's a topic on the show,
topic
right.
of our show. But we have an exceptional amount of people who are saying they enjoy the Sunday show. Dean, love your show and the cast. Keep it going. Thanks for all the laughs on Sunday morning. We've got a lot of those today.
Nice. Good.
Tons of them, so that's nice. But also, I wanted to point out, we got an actual letter, a card, from, let me see, Frank Strell, professor of language in LaSalle, Illinois.
That name rings a bell.
Dean, bonjour.
Do you know what that means?
Yeah, good day.
Okay.
Good day.
Do you know what that means?
It means Schwani's a dork in French. Le dork est Schwani.
Bonjour.
I've been a WGN fan for years. Love the Sunday morning show. You three guys make me laugh and relieve all my stress every week.
Oh,
isn't that nice?
Very nice.
The only thing I'm not happy with on your show, the food segment is too short. Aw. Very nice.
Well, sometimes it is shortened in, you know, depending on how much we're talking or, you know.
Sports.
Other things. Yeah. So.
Preemptions.
Correct. Right.
We have, what do we have today?
There's a road race today.
Oh, okay. But we're on until 1 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Regular show.
Okay. See, this kind of scintillating conversation, how could you not respond to it?
Well, that goes without saying.
We've talked vultures today.
That's a very effective word you just used.
Scintillating?
Scintillating. Yeah. I like that.
That's what I do.
When you're paying attention.
They don't give monkey show like this. yeah, so thank you. My point is, thank you very much for all the nice comments. Now, if you have something bad to me, say to me, especially if it's how I treat Schwani, please lose our number and don't call here, please. That's all we ask. Well, it's the day where we have to say, na 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 na, hey. Goodbye to Jack Hammer, producer of this show for 2-3 years now. Jack Heinrich being promoted, going to be a full-time producer on John Records Landecker's show, and also increasing his profile doing sports here on WGN. I'm sad he's leaving us.
Yeah, me too. I'll get to see him a little bit, though, during the football season.
Because he's still going to work on the Hamp and OB
Correct.
Show. But he's going to be working on hockey. And I love when I hear him filling in for Kevin or somebody doing sports.
He's filled in for Andy a time or
yes,
two.
Yes, he has.
He's filled in for Andy, yeah. I think he's got a big future on the air here in WGN. But for now, we're going to say goodbye to him. And he'll be behind the scenes, you know, producing the boogie check.
Which he's got to learn about.
Yeah. First, we have to tell him what that is.
Exactly.
Do you even know what, Jack, do you even know what the boogie check is? On John Landecker's show? Oh, wait, I turned that off. Wait, go ahead.
I don't know.
It's a very, very famous feature that
I've heard of it. I just don't
John
know what it
did.
Is.
Yeah. It's a series of phone calls that John used to do, like 50 years ago he used to do
yep.
on WGN. So, yeah, congrats. When do you start taking over there? I know you've been filling in a little bit over there.
Well, hockey's over this week, so a week from Monday.
Yeah.
We'll be full blow and doing Landecker and figuring that all out once the hockey season dies down.
What are you most looking forward to doing on John's show?
I mean, just kind of talking with him just because he's like a radio legend, and he heard me filling in. And he said I did a good job, so that was a pretty high compliment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, just really, I'm trying to learn the ins and outs. The food fight's fun. Andy comes on every now and then.
Yep.
So.
Very nice.
Just looking forward to the whole thing.
Are you going to miss Schwanee?
Oh, of course I'm going to miss Schwanee.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you.
We bonded over his records.
Oh, did he bring the 45
RPM? I brought them in and explained the vinyl, what they were.
I didn't know that a 45 minute was smaller.
Yeah, you didn't know that it was a smaller disc.
I'm like, oh, are these minis? He's like, no, they're the 45.
Yeah, because they play at 45 revolutions per minute.
Ah.
That's what the 45 refers to. All right, Schwanee, you can call me a dork for knowing.
Yeah, that's right. Dork. I have a question for you, though, Jack.
Yeah.
You heard Dean just playing Na Na Hey Hey.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of the group?
Oh, I can tell you.
I have no idea. I just hear that when a pitcher gets pulled at a baseball game.
Right, right. I'll give you a clue. It's what Schwanee is full of.
No, it's not. It's not that. So then you wouldn't know what record label it would be on either, do you?
Brother. This is like my first day when he gave me the Andy Griffith test, and I failed. Yeah.
Well, Frank is up for that next. Frank's up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank is going to be taking over for Jack. It's the group called Steam, by the way.
That's right.
Full of steam.
Lest anybody think I was saying Schwanee was full of anything else. Steam is what I meant. Now, you've been with us here, what, 3 years?
I think right about 3 years.
Three years. That's kind of a record on the show.
Yeah. Took over for Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, usually I chase them away pretty much sooner than that, often in tears.
Mm-hmm. I had a few the first couple months. I made sure you didn't see it. Andy had to pick me up.
I did.
Yeah.
Several times.
I saw him in the hall sobbing.
I believe in tough love.
Yeah.
He was sobbing in a dark corner of the hallway by himself.
I say spare the rod, spoil the producer. That's what I go with. Jack has made many, many, many contributions. He's been a fantastic producer, great partner on the show, and I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done for us here. We appreciate it very much. I'm trying to think, you know, like favorite moments that you were particularly responsible. I mean, I can't even tell you the number of times where things have gone wrong behind the scenes and Jack has somehow fixed them and you would never even know it on the air that things were blowing up. But many a morning I think I actually did it this morning where I said at the last minute, hey, what if we did blah, blah, can you blah, 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 can you put something together like in the next 20 seconds so we can get that on the air? And he 99% of the time always does. But my favorite time with this, do you remember even why we did this in the first place?
I don't. I just remember you saying, do this. Can you make this happen in 5 minutes? I'm like, I'll do my best.
We said there was something was being bleeped or something. And I said, can you take a Dave Schwann weather forecast? So awesome. Can you take Schwanee's weather forecast and just bleep out words to make it sound like he's swearing up a storm?
I think you said put a bunch of them in there.
Yeah, right. And can I get it in about 3 minutes? Mm-hmm. Can we put it on the air in about 3 minutes? And he did it. And it's one of my favorite Jack things ever on the show. Let's hear it, please.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, increasing clouds today, high only around 5, maybe some rain this afternoon as well. Rain and maybe showers overnight tonight. A low in the 30s. Cloudy, windy, cold for the season with a chance of rain and in the morning and a high around 44. 46 now at O'Hare. I'm Dave Schwann, Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
That's beautiful.
Perfectly placed.
I could not believe that you turned that around like that. The day you did that.
That was an all-time moment, watching you and Andy in the cameras.
Oh, my goodness. That was,
Andy was on the floor.
Doubled over, yep.
Still. Andy was just on laughing. The floor again this morning. Well, job well done. Job well done. Thank you again for everything. And best of luck with Landecker. I know you're going to be a superstar in sports. And I'm sure you're going to wind up being one of the primary sports anchors. Because that's the kind of talent that you have. Now, taking over for you, starting, well, he's here this morning. Frank, our new producer, is here this week. And he was sort of like running the show this morning.
Trial by fire.
Under Jack's eye.
Well, he's been here a couple of times before, I think.
Has he?
Yeah.
Once before.
Once before. Even paid attention. Was that him? I'm just kidding. I knew you.
See, he doesn't even remember now.
I'm shocked I remember his name. Usually
that
I
is pretty good.
Yeah, usually I don't remember till like the second year. Because you know, I figure, you know, why bother learning their names if they're going to quit in 6 months?
I remember my first month I was on, and like they told me I was on. And then Dean, it was like a month in, he looks at me and goes, so is this your job now? Like your show now? I'm like, yeah. And then I was scared because I thought I was doing a bad job. And he goes, okay, we'll just get you involved more. I didn't know if you were for sure
yet.
Yeah,
nobody told me. Nobody tells me anything.
I just kept showing up.
So you're here again. Does that mean you're with us?
Nobody tells me anything. So, yeah, Frank's going to be taking over next week. So, I mean, you need to either shout out Frank or scoot over a little closer to Jack.
So we can share a mic.
So we can hear you. So what's your feeling? I mean, now, you know, you've been on several shows, you've been running the shows and part of the shows, and this would be a really good time to, kiss up to me like crazy right now.
I mean, you're an awesome host. I mean, 10 out of 10 if I had
yep,
to
off to a good start it. Right there.
Attaboy.
Yeah, how was that? Was that good?
That was pretty good.
Right, sweet.
Juwani, you could take a lesson from that, by the way.
Where do you get to know him?
Oh. So are you excited?
Yeah, absolutely.
To definitely. Lose your Sunday mornings and any kind of social life that you may have had before this?
Wouldn't want to be anywhere else but here.
You know? Oh, look at this. Yeah. Look at this.
He's good.
Yeah, he is good at this. I think we learned before that you are from the Chicago area, right?
Correct.
From where exactly?
From Addison.
From Addison.
Yeah.
And,
a little bit out west.
Yeah. And, so starting next week, it's you and me, pal.
Let's get after it. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah, for sure.
Shwani, do you have any warnings for Frank? Any advice for him?
You can come and talk to me for counseling. I'll give there. You my number when we're done here.
Yeah, let me know.
Email, sure. Text, anything you need, awesome. Day or night.
Yeah,
you can come to me.
We're gonna be best friends.
I've known
you.
This. Yeah. I've known him now. It will be 44.
Longer than you've been alive. Frank.
Yes,
that's how long.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And let me give
more
you some
more than double
advice.
Your lifetime.
If you're smart, you will never give Shwani your telephone number unless you want to get late night calls out of no place. Hey, Frank, it's Shwani calling. 12:28. Happy first night of Passover for all of our Jewish friends who are listening today. Wish you the most joyous of holiday seasons. Today, of course, also is Palm Sunday. Over the last several weeks, we've been sharing recipes for Passover, for Easter, for, springtime. This time of year, it's a very seasonal food time of year. That's what we're going to get into on our Food Time show here today. What we haven't really talked about were favorite Easter brunch ideas. I know that a lot of people like to go out for Easter brunch, but when you do a brunch or if you do a special breakfast, what is your ideal brunch item? Do you have one? Share it with me, please. 312-981-7200, either on the phone or on our text line, 312-981-7200. We'll talk some Easter brunches coming up in a few minutes here. In the meantime, we're also going to use our phone line to give away a pair of tickets for the Chicago Regional premiere of The Da Vinci Code. That it is on stage at the Drury Lane Theater now through June the 1st. The best-selling novel transformed into a brand-new action-packed live theatrical experience at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook Terrace. You can get tickets by going to drurylanetheater.com
Or if you are caller 7, we'll give you a pair of tickets to go and see the show. 312-981-7200. Caller 7 will be our winner.
In the Easter parade.
1238.
I'll be all in clover.
Among the few things that I miss about doing the show from our old showcase studio window at Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue were days like Easter Sunday morning when people would come strolling the avenue in their Easter Sunday finest, you know, coming in or out of church, and then just strolling the avenue. It was just lovely and kind of a throwback to a nicer time. Most of them headed off to a really nice Easter brunch someplace in downtown Chicago, probably at one of the hotels. They all put on spectacular brunches, or one of the great restaurants in downtown Chicago putting on a great brunch. But with Palm Sunday today and Easter Sunday coming up next week, if you are thinking about something like that, you need to get going to make a reservation someplace, because it's one of the busiest eating out days of the year, the Easter brunch. So what I wanted to do today, instead of going over a list of places doing Easter brunches, almost every place is doing an Easter brunch. If you're at a hotel, it's going to be a little more expensive than any place else. I wanted to go over some Easter brunch recipes, things that you put on when you're doing a special breakfast or, you know, brunchy kind of thing. What do you like to put out for the family? What's your favorite thing to put out? I've got two ways you can check in with me on this. One is by calling up on the good old-fashioned telephone, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Or if it's easier for you, just, you know, text, give me a text and tell me, you know, what it is that you like to put out. You don't have to give me, you know, long detailed recipes or anything like that. Just kind of curious, what are some of your favorites, some of your family favorites? I've already got some in already. Some people saying that they loved hard-boiled eggs on their Easter brunch table. Oh boy, don't get me started with hard-boiled eggs. If you were watching the TV morning news this past Wednesday, I made my mom's recipe for deviled eggs. They were delicious, by the way. But Larry Potash and Pat Tomasulo don't like hard-boiled eggs. You know what? Don't like is not even a strong enough word. They despise them. They hate them. They were actually booing me when I was preparing the recipe. That's how much they don't like them. Some people don't like hard-boiled eggs. That's fine. But boy, people were lined up outside my cooking table so they could get some. A lot of people do like the deviled eggs. And if you missed it, we've got the recipe and we've got the video of me being mocked by Larry and Pat posted at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. Paul Conrad lined up. He must have eaten like 10 of them by himself. Robin Baumgarten had a whole bunch. The whole crew munching down on the deviled eggs, and they were delicious. They have my mom's recipe, which we all have posted. If you want to make it for your Easter brunch, has you know, green relish in it, has mayonnaise, has some really fine diced onion, really fine diced celery, little Dijon mustard. I've got the whole recipe all posted. Oh, and her secret ingredient, as she put it, her secret ingredient, a little bit of horseradish. It doesn't make it hot, just gives it a tiny bit of zip, and it does make a big, big difference. So if you're interested in that, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. If you want the recipe, the written-out recipe, printable, or if you want to see the video, which is pretty funny, of Larry and Pat mocking me while I was making them. So here we go. Let's see what we've got here on the text line. My family loves my sister's incredible crab cakes. with hollandaise sauce. Oh, that's a good brunch item. I love crab cakes. You put a nice platter of crab cakes out with some delicious hollandaise sauce. See, I wouldn't have even thought of hollandaise. I would have put a little, like, tartar sauce or something like that. Hollandaise is a much better idea. Love that. Love that idea. Here is one. Oh, the first one that I said, the hard-boiled eggs. You know, it's a trick. I've got a recipe, by the way, or a technique, I guess you might say, for making the perfect hard-boiled egg and peeling the perfect hard-boiled egg. That's also up with my recipes online, WGNTV.com/Dean Cook. So if you're interested in that, I love a hard-boiled egg. I know some people don't. I love it. I love to put prime. Here's the 773 area code. I love prime rib on my brunch table. Well, that's a fancy brunch table. I want to come to your brunch table. I love prime rib. That's a great idea. Here we go with, I love a spinach feta vegetable omelet. Yeah, that's good. Maybe like a casserole, something like that for a brunch table. Similar concept where I would put, I love what you're saying too. I love the omelet. But I think for a brunch, I might make it like a casserole with the eggs, the vegetables. I would put green pepper. I would put onion. I think I would put red bell pepper. I would put spinach, fresh spinach. Makes a big difference. Some feta cheese. I've said a million times, I love Dudoni brand feta cheese. D-O-D-O-N-I, Dudoni feta cheese. I get no compensation or no nothing. It's just really delicious. So I'm happy to recommend it. I would put that in a greased baking dish, maybe even some potatoes. I might steam some potatoes or, you know, boil some potatoes and put those in there as well, and make it a really nice, maybe some, you know, I put the feta cheese on top so it melts a little bit. That would be a fantastic brunch dish. What else do we have here? Let's see on the old text line. 708 area code. I love a cheesy potato casserole. Oh, that's heaven right there. Nice cheesy potato. You know, the potato. I would use Yukon Gold potatoes, I think. I would use, I love sharp cheddar cheese. I would put that in, cut it all up, bake it for a little while. Absolutely delicious. Here's the 847 area code. Some Easter brunch ideas, 312-981-7200, 847 area code, Egg Benedict Casserole with Hollandaise Sauce, fantastic, and cinnamon rolls. Oh boy, I haven't had a homemade cinnamon roll forever. That would be delicious, like an Ann Sather style. Ann Sather, you know, used to be, probably still are, famous for their cinnamon rolls. That would really be good for an Easter brunch. What else do we have here? Let me see. You know what I wanted to tell you about? I don't do brunches very often because I work on TV in the morning. And on Sunday morning, when most people have brunch on Sunday, I'm right here with you. So I don't really do brunches very often. But on the rare occasions when I have, the last time I did, I made a French toast with brioche bread. You can make it with brioche. You can make it with challah bread, you know, which is a thicker, maybe slightly sweeter bread. And, you know, what I did was I took I think I used brioche, the brioche bread. It's nice and thick. You know, obviously you soak it in an egg mixture. I put eggs. I put nutmeg. I put cinnamon. I think I put a little vanilla extract in there as well. You know, mixed it all, you know, together really good. Dipped the brioche bread in it. And then, you know, put it on the frying pan or, you know, the skillet. And it browns up beautifully. and it gets very custardy. You know, it's nice and crispy and brown on the outside, and it is nice and custardy on the inside. Throw a little, you know, warm maple syrup, not pancake syrup, but maple syrup makes a big difference in the flavor. That is a brunch favorite right there. All right, how about more suggestions from you? 312-981-7200, The Food Time Show on WGN. It is The Food Time Show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program. But every Sunday at this time, talking Easter brunching this week. What are your favorite items to put out for a brunch? Or, you know, fancy breakfast? If you like maybe going out to, you know, brunch? What are your favorite things? What must be on that brunch table as people get ready to put out their Easter brunches next week? I love this one from the 847. If a brunch doesn't have a good carving table, then I'm going to just eat mimosas. Gotta have a mimosa. Now, I made some mimosas, I think, last year on TV. It was champagne. You can use Prosecco. You can use whatever kind of sparkling wine you want. But it was, let's just say, champagne. And I mixed together orange juice, and I pureed some raspberries. Orange juice and raspberries together. You can do the same thing with strawberries and orange. I pureed them and put that. I was the champagne, orange, and raspberry or strawberry mixture. Oh, baby, that makes a good mimosa right there. 773 area code. Dean, have you ever tried Scrapple? I bought some this morning and haven't tried it. I don't think I've ever had Scrapple. Is that canned meat? Is that like Spam? Scrapple? I don't know. Maybe someone will text or call and tell us. It's funny. I was just talking about Spam this week. Because I know it's not healthy, and I don't eat it very often. But when I do, I love a little fried Spam with eggs. Delicious. You go to Hawaii, good luck not finding Spam someplace. It's like a national dish in Hawaii, Spam. And as kids, we used to have eggs with fried Spam, eggs with fried salami, eggs with fried bologna. We used to have that all the time. So I don't know. I don't know if Scrapple is the same thing or not. Is Scrapple something that's made with potato? I don't know. 312-981-7200, if you know that. 708 area code Diener. The key to cheesy potato casserole is sour cream and cream of chicken soup and some diced onions. Huh. Okay, so maybe you dice the onions first, put those in, little can of cream chicken soup or sour cream with the potatoes and I'm going to say some nice shredded sharp cheddar cheese. Says it's the Boy Scout way here on this text. Yeah, I could definitely see, you know, making some of that over an open fire at good old Waspy Scout Camp. That's where we did a lot of our Boy Scout cooking. 630 area code. Dean, Easter brunch must have Hoska, a beautiful double braided breakfast bread with golden raisins. The recipe is what we call Bohemian, or what we call Czech today, as in, like, you know, the Czech Republic. You know, Greeks have a bread like that for Easter. It's called Tsuraiki. It's a sweet bread that maybe you've seen it. It also is a double braided bread, and they bake a hard boiled egg right into the loaf of the bread, which is the egg is dyed a deep red color for Greek Orthodox. That's the traditional color. We don't do pastels. The traditional way to do it is a deep red color, which is symbolic of the blood of Christ. But Hoska, good to know that. that's out there and, you know, should be part of it all. Let me see here. 773, I wonder if the military still serves canned rations like Spam. Don't know. I would hope that they've moved on. There's plenty of other alternatives for sure. But you know what? I'm not going to trash Spam. It's loaded with sodium. It's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it is delicious. I will tell you that much. I do like that. Let me see here. Let me see. What else do we have? A lot of Egg Benedict recipes with hollandaise sauce. That's all good to see. I wanted to mention one other thing. Regular cooking method in the skillet or electric skillet, it's asking. I assume regarding the French toast, maybe? I'm not sure what you're referring to with that. But I think, it's a full recipe that somebody sent in several different texts. Now I see what you're talking about. From the 224 area code, several texts that say French toast should only be made with Hawaiian bread. I was talking about brioche or challah bread. This says only use Hawaiian bread. And you cook it in a Dutch oven or in a skillet or electric skillet. Okay, I appreciate that. Appreciate all of your calls and texts on that.